This interview is for information only and should not be considered as investment advice or a recommendation to buy shares in the company featured. Welcome to this Stockbox interview. Today is Barney Neal, the Chief Communications Officer for Albert Labs, soon to list on the Canadian Stock Exchange with the ticker ABRT and coming to the London markets at some point in the future as well. Now, the company's mission is to ensure accelerated access to safe and effective psychedelic-assisted therapies for patients with urgent and unmet needs. So, Barney, thank you very much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for having this on.
Yeah, it's good to be talking to you. This psychedelic space seems to be picking up some steam. This is probably the third company that we've spoken to in this space. So if I can ask you, first of all, to perhaps just give me the high-level overview, the elevator pitch of the company and what you're all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so grateful for being in this space. It's really an exciting one. So Albert Labs is a laboratory-based clinical trial, clinical research and development company. We have a team of experts at the production and extraction of natural compounds, and that's how we're creating our licensed medicine. And through a succinct clinical pathway focusing on real-world evidence, which I'll touch on a bit more detail later on, we look to initially commercialize our mycelium-based psilocybin medicine for the treatment of cancer-related distress. That includes depression, anxiety, and existential crisis. And we're really focusing on accelerating access for patients. And so we know that there's a huge unmet need with over a million patients in the UK suffering from cancer-related distress. And these patients, unfortunately, cannot have antidepressants or other modern therapies for their mental health. So continually untreated. And so we wish to treat them with this novel approach using psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy.
Okay. Now, I understand that your focus is really on the UK and the European Union, and yet you're listed on the Canadian Stock Exchange. So why the focus on these markets?
I think it comes to a couple of reasons, really. Firstly, the UK have already kind of shown that they're really interested in psychedelics. We've had Imperial College London, which is a fantastic institute and has already researched psychedelics, in particular psilocybin, quite thoroughly. So we know that the UK are already a good clinical research centre. And we are also, we have the MHRA, which is our health regulator. Very highly regarded regulator. We've really seen that over the last 2 years with the COVID-19 vaccines. We were one of the first countries to approve these. And a lot of the evidence collected for the COVID vaccines really came off the back of a real world evidence approach. And we see this as the right approach to address psychedelic assisted psychotherapy as well. And then just on that, there's also one more thing to note. Is that they, at the beginning of the year 2021, so last year now, the UK government came out with an ILAP protocol. And ILAP is an innovative licensing access pathway, which is essentially similar to the breakthrough designation you can often receive in America. And the idea is simply to fast track the development of innovative medicines. And we've already seen a couple of psychedelic companies and molecules be accepted into ILAP, and our intentions are to do the same. So they're the three, I suggest, three reasons why the UK.
So I wonder if you can tell me a little bit more about real-world studies then. What are they? How do they work? How do they differ from perhaps the traditional clinical trials that people are more familiar with?
Yeah, absolutely. And there is quite the real world evidence, I'm going to call it RWE, and then you've got the randomized controlled trial, RCT. And firstly, they're not to be seen as completely different pathways. They are, you know, a subset of the same clinical trial protocols. However, there's a more increased approach on patients that are struggling with the indication that you intend to treat. And there's also a much higher degree of unmet need. we always hear pharmaceuticals talk about an unmet need, but when you have a patient cohort that simply are given no other option, like there is no alternative therapy here, we can start to move a bit faster, and we can start to look at patients in the real world setting. And by a real world setting, I mean in the hospitals that the cancer patients find themselves. And so it's common knowledge that randomized controlled trials can take 5 to 12 years to go through all three phases and look for a marketing authorization at the end. With a real world evidence approach, we can really speed up that timeline. We'll start to look at our patients that are struggling today and the cancer related distress as a first instance. So it's an akin to a phase 2B approach. However, the data collection is also much wider. You're taking in wider data sets. And it's really important to note that actually, just before Christmas 2021, again, so a few months ago, the MHRA actually released guidance enabling companies and setting out the rules and protocols surrounding real-world evidence. And in that guidance, the fundamental outcome was that clinical data should be looked at clinical data as long as you have the validity and the reliability of your data sets and you reduce biases as much as possible, then this data should be treated in the same way as a randomized controlled trial data will be treated. So in that way, it's seen in very much the same light. We just believe we can move faster with this approach. And it's also important to note we're dealing with psychedelic assisted psychotherapy. So we have a drug interaction, but we also have a therapy. It's impossible to pull the two apart, we believe. And so when you have those two different areas of medicine, the therapy and the drug interaction, it's impossible to remove all human biases, and nor should we try to remove all human biases. Then that's going to greatly limit the therapy that we can provide a patient, and that's not the way in which we should work with psychedelics. They're incredibly powerful substances, and used in the correct manner with the therapist and the environment all set, then we're seeing fantastic results, and that continues to happen with Imperial College's result just a year ago, and a recent Compass Pathways result that came out. Just fantastic results from these compounds.
Mm. Well, talking about psychedelics being very powerful substances and psilocybins, affecting the brain in a very dramatic way, the subject is perhaps a little bit taboo. I'm sure that will change as information gets out there and these studies progress, just like it did with medicinal cannabis. But how do psilocybins treat depression? Is it about treating mental issues by giving a mental stimulant?
Not entirely. It works in a different way. We have a phrase, neuroplasticity, and this is the main mechanistic action that the psychedelics induce. The way to look at it, I use this analogy, I believe it was Robin Carhart Harris who first kind of coined it, but when you have these ruminative depressed thought patterns, you continually, it's human nature, you continually think down the same thoughts. And as a result, those neurons, those thought pathways kind of increase in size and get more deep rooted. And so you're kind of locked into this cycle. The way in which I describe psychedelics is like, imagine the same was on a ski slope. You've got all these different ski paths going, trails going all different directions. And there's certain ones that are used more and more and more, and they're the ones that will be the most popular moving forward. And then you imagine you have a snow globe, and you shake it, you get a fresh layer of snow. And now, there are no deep-rooted pathways, and you can almost form your own kind of thought patterns. And that also is similar in some ways in how the neurons represent the neurons as well within the brain.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's a good analogy to think about. Do you know if there's any dangers that you need to be aware of in this space as well?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, it'd be wrong of me to say there's a danger, not a danger in drug development. There always is. However, one thing to note is these substances have been around for, quite a long time now, 60, 70 years. I think it was 52 maybe. Psilocybin was first synthesized by Albert Hofmann, which is somewhat where our name kind of coined from. And since that time, there's been a phenomenal amount of trials. And then, of course, we had the war on drugs and psilocybin got squashed to the underground. But in the meantime, there has been thousands upon millions of patients, let's be real, who have used psilocybin in some form or another. And you can look at medical records from hospitals and so on and so forth. And you really don't see huge, and serious adverse events. So by that, I mean, cardiac issues, liver toxicity, issues such as that, you see very little of. However, there is the important thing to note that these are incredibly powerful drugs and, ought to be and must be taken in a clinical manner, in a safe setting. You hear the phrases set and setting. Well, you've got your environment and then you've got your mind setting. Of your mindset, and it's critical to get both of those right to mitigate and to reduce the risk as much as possible to any patients.
Okay, so let's come on to what you're treating then, and of course the focus is on the cancer-related depressions. Why the focus on the cancer and not perhaps chronic depression that is a real-world problem?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for the question. Of course, we see the opportunity is really as big as mental health globally, which I think you can say affects a billion people nowadays, which is, I guess, almost 8% of the world. And it's expected to be, 100 billion pounds per year is spent on the mental health crisis in the UK alone. So why are we focused on cancer? Well, as I said earlier on, unfortunately, a cancer patient has a myriad of different medications. And so there is a lot of conservatism with doctors prescribing antidepressants. And so you have a group of patients, and it's unfortunately a large group, as I say, a million patients who have, severe depression, anxiety, or existential crisis, which is, the idea of the fear of death and coming to one's own morality. They can't be treated with antidepressants in the fear that there's, contraindications and crossover with other medication. And so we have a patient that's untreated. And when that's the case, you can start to look at novel therapies and you can start to provide access to a group of patients much quicker. And so we're really focused on cancer. Not only is it a national agenda item, with millions and billions of pounds being spent annually, it's also an area that's being, ignored somewhat. And so we feel our mission is really important to treat the cancer patients first. And in doing so, we can move a lot faster, we can collect outputs a lot quicker, and we can, submit our evidence and our dossier to the regulators much faster in order to get an authorized medicine at the end of here. So we see it as a strategy really to really come to market at a faster pace, but also help a group of patients who have no alternatives. And so we feel, it's very valuable to have the commercial kind of success and strategy for success, but also, know that you're really helping out a huge group of patients who have no alternatives.
Okay. And just a final question, and of course, you are coming to market, so investors will want to know about the investment case and how you're going to generate revenue for the company. So what are the plans? How will the company make money, and what's the strategy for growth?
At the first instance, we have a clinical trial to complete. So in the first instance, we'll be running the clinical trial. That's looking to be between 100 and 200 patients. The joy of the psychedelic assisted psychotherapy, what we're seeing is outcomes incredibly quickly, almost from the 3 weeks point after the therapy itself, we'll be having outputs. We'd like to follow them up as you would. You'd like to follow up your patient maybe to 6 months. So let's say the trial runs for 6 months, and then after that, we'll hopefully be able to continue to treat patients through the specials route where there's patients with this unmet need and we can get clinicians under their own kind of decision-making to put patients forward for our trial and we will see reimbursement for those patients. And so whilst the trial is something that we must pay for, Shortly afterwards, we'll see patients coming through and being treated using our same therapy sessions. And as a result, we can see revenue from those patients. So we can start to see early revenue with this model and this approach. And again, focusing on the cancer enables us to do this somewhat. And so we look to treat patients and get reimbursed and see revenues really begin towards the tail end of this year, 2022. And then we see us on this particular drug looking to break even just after about 1,000 patients in a market of over a million patients alone in the UK is quite a small market share. So you can quickly see as we begin to scale our therapy and once we submit our dossier over to the regulators and see market acceptance, you can really see this is a huge opportunity for investors out there. And then just a bit about our comparables. We're currently listing on the CSE under the ticker ABRT, as you said. The valuation upon listing should be around $16 million Canadian dollars. And some of our friends in the psychedelic industry are, you know, closer to a million and closer to half a billion in some cases. And so we really do see an opportunity for investors to come on board and see some returns and also get some return, you know, more personally as they actually benefit a huge group of patients, as I say.
Okay. Well, it certainly sounds like an exciting year ahead. I look forward to catching up with you. Good luck with the listing coming up. But for now, Barney Neal, the Chief Communications Officer for Albert Labs, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your time.
If you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like, or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programs at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.